So we'll continue our study of Sefer Malachim Aleph, and we're up to Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. It is in some ways a standalone chapter, in that from the beginning to end of the Perek, we're not really going to deal with any of the Malachim directly from the Northern Kingdom or any of the Malachim from the Southern Kingdom. It's really all going to be about Eliyahu. We're introduced to Eliyahu, and it's definitely a little bit striking, you know, the last story that we ended off with, which almost seemed out of place. Right, we were introduced to Ahav. Ahav is the new king over the Northern Kingdom. His father Omri had successfully led a rebellion against the king Zimri, who also led a rebellion, and Omri had really solidified himself as king, had moved the capital, and his son Ahav, who was introduced to us, and we hear that. You know, again, we hear that Ahav is the worst king who had ever been king, and we hear the fact that he was the first king, at least, that it's announced to us that he intermarried. He married a foreign woman. He married Izebel from the kingdom of Sidon, who she was a princess. And so we end with this little story about an individual named in Pasuk Lamed Dalet. This is the last Pasuk in Perek Tazayin. Someone named Chiel. Chiel, an individual, built up the town of Yericho. Yericho had a curse assigned to it from the time of Yoshua ben Nun. And that curse was in play that anyone who would build up Yericho, their oldest child would pass away at the beginning, their youngest child would pass away at the end. They'd literally lose their whole family. That took place. And now we pick up Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayomer Eliyahu Hatishbi Mitoshvei Gilad El Ahav. So we have we're not going to have a dialogue. It's going to be a one pasuk monologue, where Eliyahu, who is a Tishbite, who lives amongst the Giladites, he says to Ahav, who is the king, Chai Hashem, by the life of Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, Asher Amadati Lefanov, whom I stand, or before whom I have stood, before whom I stand. If there will be years, these years, there will be tal and matar, tal dew and matar rain, ki im lefi devari, except by the word of my mouth, which is to be understood as a language of a shvua, of an oath, basically swearing that God, right, I swear by God, which is the highest form of a shvua, is to swear by God, right, the same. The Rambam, when he talks about Shavuos, talks about, on the one hand, a Shavuah could technically be the greatest source of Avodas Hashem, because you're swearing something is true. How do you swear something is true? By swearing that Hashem is true. So you're in your monetary matters, you're affirming God's existence and God's truth. That's a beautiful thing. Obviously, it also calls into question when someone swears and it's not true, so then you're basically saying that the same way I swore something not true, so to God, God forbid, is not true. So it's understood that Eliyahu is taking a shvuah. He's taking a shvuah that there shouldn't be any rain unless he says so, which definitely seems to be out of left field. On the one hand, you would say, okay, maybe it's not out of left field because, well, the Jews haven't been behaving. And if the Jews haven't been behaving, and Ahav is the worst of the kings, so it's about time they get a punishment. So Eliyahu steps in kind of as the protector of Hashem and say, listen, you Jewish people in the Northern Kingdom, you deserve a punishment.
There was an interesting comment about where did all this take place, and that both Ahav and Eliyahu were paying a shiva called Tachiyah.
Oh, so that's where I'm getting. That's good. So this is the Gemara in the Yerushalmi. Basically asks the question, you know, like we ask in Parshas Rashi, the famous Rashi in Bahar, Ma inyan shmita leitzahar sinai. Why you mention the two things together? So what happened was, and this Chiel must have been someone important, because the Talmud Yerushalmi says, the Radak quotes this, Rashi quotes this, that Chiel, at least for the last of his children, was sitting Shiva. And he had a Shiva call, he had a Nicham Avelim, both from the king of Israel and from one of the Nevi'im, from Eliyahu, who we know of as a Navi. Here we're being introduced to him for the very first time, but it's going to be very clear, very quickly, that he is a Navi, and not just any Navi, because we know we're dealing with a time that many people could be Nevi'im. He's going to be considered a prominent Navi, I mean, you know, how could we sit here, you know, hundreds of years later and say who is a prominent Navi? So one of the, you know, there's going to be, I think, an objective way. Well, first of all, we know he was prominent because we know his name. We don't know the names of most of the Nevi'im in history. There are 48 male Nevi'im, 7 female Nevi'im who we know of. So Eliyahu is clearly one of them. He's one of the famous ones. He comes to every bris, which is what we're going to have to talk about. Maybe he comes to our Seder. But the... So he's paying a Shiva call to the Schia. And they're sitting there, and Eliyahu is going to be throughout, right? The number one theme about Eliyahu is out there for the honor of Hashem. He always wants to protect the honor of Hashem. And according to this Gemara in the Yerushalmi, he kind of says it like it is when he's sitting there with Chiel. He says, you want to know why you're sitting Shiva? You're sitting Shiva because you built up Yericho. And the Navi came, Yehoshua was a Navi. Yehoshua said, whoever builds up Yericho is going to be cursed. And that's exactly what happened. Achav is sitting there, and Achav starts to laugh. And Achav turns to Eliyahu. Again, whether this was appropriate to take place at the Shiva house, or I think also we can't necessarily read this Yerushalmi with our, you know, 2019 sensitivities. But Achav turned to Eliyahu and asked him a rhetorical question and said, who's greater, the prophet Moshe or the prophet Yehoshua? So Eliyahu answered, obviously, the Rebbe. The Rebbe was Moshe Rabbeinu. So Achav says, it can't be. It can't be, because Moshe Rabbeinu says in the Torah, we read in Kriyat Shema, that the punishment for worshiping other gods is that there won't be any rain. And yet, here we are, my kingdom, northern kingdom, we worship tons of gods, we don't worship God, we don't worship Hashem, we are Oved Avodah Zarah, and it rains. It's actually been plentiful up until now. So therefore, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuahs don't come through, Yehoshua's nevuahs also don't come through. We're sitting here at a Shiva house, okay, whatever happened. The you know, Chiel lost a child, and yeah, he lost many children, but it has nothing to do. So Eliyahu kind of was angry to defend the honor of God, so he stands up and makes this shvua about the rain. That Eliyahu, he kind of can't take it anymore, that the honor of Hashem is being so disgraced. At the same time, we're asking ourselves, you know, where is God? Why is God not enacting a punishment? Why, if the drought is the appropriate punishment, as it says in Kriyat Shema, so why is it that Hashem has not meted out this punishment yet? Why is it Eliyahu has to step in? So the Mefarshim point out the idea that we see, and this is something that we hope to believe in for ourselves, that Hashem is an Erech HaPayim. Hashem is very slow to anger. Here we see it's like extremely slow. We're not just talking about someone who, you know, the little, quote-unquote, little things that good Jews do wrong. We're talking about, you know, Avodah Zarah, like the big cardinal three sin, and maybe even, you know, we have had hints of that, those promiscuity and things of that nature. So so Hashem is slow to anger. Obviously, when you get to the end of the story of the Northern Kingdom, the anger, whatever, it reached its boiling point, and they got it. Perhaps, you know, the ultimate got it because they got lost. But Eliyahu says, I'm taking a shvuah that there'll be no rain, and as we're about to see, it worked. Meaning Hashem is going to agree to Eliyahu. And so that, in and of itself, that highlights how great Eliyahu is. Hashem could have said, okay, Eliyahu, you can take this Shavuah, but I'm not going to affect the Jewish people because of you. But Hashem does. So that's the connection. Again, you don't necessarily need it. You could just say, here's Eliyahu, and the Jewish Achav, under the control of Achav, the Jewish people are deserving of a punishment, and Achav particular. But the Talmud Yerushalmi definitely fills in the gap to let us understand. Now, who is Eliyahu? So first of all, he's described as being Hatishbi and Mitoshvei Gilad, right? Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu Hatishbi, right? Eliyahu HaGiladi. So why does he have so many identifications? So he may have been originally from a place called Teshev or Tishb, and then he moved, and now currently he's from Gilad. The Radak and the Midrashim have, the Rishonim have three interpretations of what tribe he was from. And I happen to think the Radak has an amazing line, which I'll quote to you. So the Radak says he may have been from the tribe of Gud, perhaps focusing on Tishbi. He may have been from the tribe of Binyamin, which would maybe focus on Gilad and Giladi. And then the famous approach of Chazal, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is a type of Medrash that says that he was Pinchas, the famous idea, Ze Pinchas Ze Eliyahu, the same individual that was Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, who was the Kohen Gadol after Elazar, the son, right? Aaron's the Kohen Gadol, then his son Elazar, then his son Pinchas. Pinchas was the Kohen Gadol during the time period of the Shoftim, and specifically during the time of the tragedy of Pilegesh Begiva, and the position of Kahuna Gadola went away from Pinchas at that time. It shifted to the, he comes from the family of Elazar, his father. It shifted to the family of Itamar, the last son, the youngest son of Aaron. Eli comes from Itamar, the famous Eli from the Shmuel story, but Eli's punished, and the Kahuna Gadola switched back to the family of Pinchas. And so Pinchas is an approach that Pinchas is Eliyahu, which would make Eliyahu a Kohen. So he wouldn't be from the tribe of God, he wouldn't be from the tribe of Binyamin, he'd be from the Kohanim. Why he is a Kohen living in the north, that would be a question, because so far we've definitely, it's been hinted to us, Psukim and Divrei Yamim seem to imply that the Kohanim and the Levim moved to the southern kingdom, specifically after they realized they have no place. When Yerubim ben Nevat basically got rid of the hierarchy of Kohen Levi, because he's Yerubim ben Nevat was always anti-Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is kahuna, that represents the concept of the kahuna. So therefore, if you don't want to let them go to Beis HaMikdash, you want to get rid of that. He wanted to make anyone can be a Kohen. Anyone can be a Kohen because anywhere can be a Beis HaMikdash. Anywhere can be a temple to worship. So the Kohanim came down. So why Eliyahu was living in the north doesn't seem to be explained to us. Now, clearly he has a mission. He's going to have a mission to deal actively with Achav, who's the king in the north. But the Radak's line, after he quotes these three, he says, V'chol achad mehem, each of the approaches, the one who says he's from God, the one who says he's from Binyamin, the one who says he's a Kohen, so mech dvarav ela psukim dvarim rechokim, they use psukim, but kind of like stretches, to say, v'anachnu lo yadanu ha'emes, we just don't know. We don't know. So, you know, if you like, you know, I think many of us, for whatever reason, like the Pinchas Eliyahu connection. It sits well. They're going to see there's some similarities. Pinchas was clearly, right, he earns his position as being a Kohen from being a zealot, from stepping up to protect the honor of Hashem, almost when no one else was willing to do so. That's why Pinchas, the Torah describes Pinchas wasn't really a Kohen, because Pinchas was born not a Kohen. Pinchas is like good trivia. We think he's the only one who was not born a Kohen, but became a Kohen. Like the bad old joke, you know, to make, you know, go to the rabbi and make me a Kohen. So Pinchas actually went to the rabbi. He didn't ask to be made a Kohen, but Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem made him a Kohen because he was born before Aaron became a Kohen. And the Torah describes that Aaron and his sons become Kohanim, and the Torah Shavah understands their sons that they have from this point and on will be Kohanim. But any son who was born, you kind of feel bad for that kid. Again, you know, sitting on the therapy couch. But the... he wasn't a Kohen. In his act of zealotry, in order to protect the honor of God in the story with the tribe of Shimon, so then he's given a bris kahuna, he's given as a reward becoming a Kohen. So it definitely makes sense as we just see right now, who the individual currently who steps up to protect the honor of God out of nowhere, no one else is doing it, no other Navi is stepping up to the plate, it's Eliyahu. So therefore, we kind of see like he's got the character traits of Pinchas, so it would quote-unquote make sense. Clearly, you have to be dealing with, we're talking about a Navi who's going to do great miracles. In order for him to be Pinchas, so you have to do the math. He has to be Pinchas. If he's the same Pinchas, that means he's still alive from having left Mitzrayim. So, whatever. It's I don't know, 500 years old, something like that. Maybe a little bit more by now. So it's as the Radak says. The Radak says we don't know. So you'll go with whatever approach. We will make reference to the Pinchas and the being a Kohen. It does fit into some of the other Pshatim. He takes a Shvua by the life of Hashem. He refers to God Asher Amadati Lefanov, the God before whom I have stood. So the Radak says that. And the Mitzvot David as well. What is this language of Amad? So it's kind of as we refer to davening, right? We refer to the silent Shemoneh Esrei as the Amidah, the concept of the time that we stand before Hashem. And so that I stand before Hashem means in tefillah, in prayer. And the Radak even quotes a pasuk, cites a pasuk from last week's parsha, when Avram Avinu, it says v'chein el amakom asher amad sham es panei Hashem. Avram refers to the place where he prayed as the place where he stood. Specifically, standing is in a language of prayer, and it's almost like saying, you know, the God, right? He's talking to Achav, saying, I am cursing you and the people and the people of the north that you're not going to have rain. I pray to God, meaning I'm someone who prays to Hashem. I'm someone that has a relationship with Hashem, and therefore I have the quote unquote power or responsibility to protect the honor of Hashem. And he curses that there won't be, or takes an oath, there won't be any tal, there won't be any matar. And we don't hear from Achav in terms of the psukim themselves. We are going to hear from Achav in the rest of the story, but we seem to take a break for the rest of this chapter, for the rest of the perek. Achav is not in the picture, and we're dealing just solely with Eliyahu. So pasuk beis, vayihi dvar Hashem elav lemor. End of pasuk. We're going to see that at least two times in this perek, which I haven't seen an explanation. It seems a little bit unique. It seems different than we haven't seen a direct dialogue between Hashem and a Navi in the sense that we hear a phrase like that. It sounds a little bit like almost like the Torah, like Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Vayihi Dvar Hashem Elav Lemor. The word of Hashem came to him meaning Eliyahu, saying, so this is proof, quote, this is proof from the text that Eliyahu is a Navi. If you didn't know he was a Navi until now, based on the first pasuk, which you don't, Hashem is talking to him directly as a Navi. We know when we say that Hashem is talking to him, so Nevi'im, besides Moshe Rabbeinu, receive their Nevuah in a sleep state, but the pasuk always presents it as a dialogue. So, Vayihi Dvar Hashem Elav Lemor, the word of Hashem came to Eliyahu saying, Lech Mizeh, go from this, go from here, go from, as the Mefarshim understand, go from being near Achav. Ufanisa lecha kedma, turn yourself and go towards the east. V'nistarta banachal kris, and you should, like the language of haster, you should become hidden, you should hide yourself by a certain river called kris, which we're not exactly sure where it is, but asher al pnei hayarden. It faces the Yarden, so wherever he was coming from, again, we don't know exactly where, right, if he was at Chiel's place, was that where Chiel built up, is that near Yericho, wherever Chiel, right, if we're taking the Talmud Yerushalmi and saying that that's where he was, that's where he cursed or swore and would put off Achav, or is it referring to somewhere near Achav, and then he has to leave? So Mefarshim understand, right? Rashi just says simply, "V'nistarta, you should hide yourself." Because basically, everything is going to come true. It's going to stop raining. There's going to be a drought, and it's clearly going to be the fault of Eliyahu. So if you are your classic Ovid Avodah Zarah, like Achav and Izevel, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to start really praying to your Avodah Zarahs that they should bring rain, or you're at least going to try to get the guy who did this and deal with him, negotiate with him off of his head, something, punish him. Do something. So Hashem wants Eliyahu to run, and specifically run somewhere near the Yarden. So he's still in Eretz Yisrael. He's still in, as we're going to see from the next psukim, he's going to remain in the northern kingdom. So number one is you could ask, well, why not, the best place to run, if you're going to run, the best place to run would be to the southern kingdom. There's a new king, or not new, there's a different king, who is definitely more religious than Achav. Presumably, you'll be able to seek respite there. The other question you could ask is, why is this necessary? The same God who's going to listen to Eliyahu HaNavi and stop the rain and cause a drought for an entire 10 of the 12 tribes, that God can't provide a little protection, a little, you know, security detail. So Achav will come and Eliyahu will be protected. Or, you know, Achav won't be able to find him even in the city. He'll be able to stay hidden, and there'll be a miracle. So, the piece about Eliyahu not running to the southern kingdom is there's a little bit, we're going to see a back and a forth, a little bit of a tension in that Hashem wants the rain to stop because Eliyahu said so. But Hashem also is not satisfied holding back rain from Am Yisrael. That punishing the entire nation is something that Hashem takes very seriously. And he wants Eliyahu to quote-unquote feel the pain. And if Eliyahu would run to the southern kingdom where there is no drought, he'll never feel the pain. So it's easy to stand up for the honor of Hashem when you don't feel what the simple people, the little people, even in our minds, there's such a tension. Because even those simple people, little people in the northern kingdom were currently idol worshippers. So they're deserving of punishment. But at the same time, Hashem has mercy. Hashem's a father, Avinu Shebashamayim. And so he wants to punish, but he doesn't want them to be so pained. So he doesn't want Eliyahu to be so removed from the famine. He wants him to feel the effects of it. And also an idea in terms of why he doesn't provide the protection right there. So when God provides miracles, they're usually done in less public or less open fashions. A drought, you can ascribe a drought to natural, meaning there are places that have droughts in the world. There are parts of this country that have had droughts. There are parts of Eretz Yisrael can go through a drought. We know the whole Meseches Tainus in the Mishnah and the Gemara. So it's like the last two pages talk about the fast days that we keep, and the first 26 pages, which is the majority, it's a short Meseches, talk about all the fasts that they would enact if there wasn't rain. They went through, right, in Eretz Yisrael, they're already. Right, you went to Eretz Yisrael, you probably couldn't daven for the Amud. Because if you daven for the Amud, it's a problem. Because on the seventh day of Cheshvan, they switched to V'sein Talu Matal Levracha. So if you're an American who's coming just for a 2 week, you're coming for Thanksgiving, very popular to go for Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving, the halacha is Thanksgiving is always in November. We only start saying V'sein Talu Matal Levracha in December. So if you're going for a very short trip, what do you do? So to definitely to be a chazan for the community, you probably shouldn't do it. You should probably, and the same thing reverse. That's why we had a guest from Eretz Yisrael who davened Shacharis on Shabbos. So we had him daven on Shacharis. We had him only on Shabbos because Shabbos we don't say that. That's probably not why. Probably because his family is making a simcha. But had he davened Mincha yesterday afternoon, it'd be a problem. He already switched on the seventh. It doesn't go by. That's one halacha where everyone agrees. It goes by where you are. In terms of if you're living there for the whole time, so the how do we get on this?
Supernatural miracle.
Right. So not having drought. See, it's good. It's good. Someone's taking notes. Stenographer. So a drought. That's you can ascribe that to being natural. Eliyahu being hidden, and we're going to see there is some. Small miracles, quote unquote, that the regular people wouldn't know about. So that's normally how God interacts with this world. Had he had Eliyahu be in the palace with Achav or near the palace with Achav, and yet Achav would try to punch him and it wouldn't penetrate, there'd be some force field, that would be much more open, and that's just not the approach normally taken. So Hashem gives him the command, go to this place, go by a river, and Hashem says in Pasuk Dalid, Vaya mehanachal teshteh. You'll have all the drink you need. You'll drink water from the river. Ve'esha orvim tzivisi l'chal kelcha sham. And ravens, I've commanded ravens. Again, we're going to have to refer to that as a hidden miracle. L'chal kelcha, word kalkala means to sustain. The same language that's used by Yosef and Mitzrayim. When he's providing sustenance to everyone, we say it in Alamechia Balkalkala, we say it in our blessings. So the ravens are going to bring you Kalkala, as we'll see soon. And the Mitzvah David points out, why is Hashem going to use a raven? Why is he using a raven? So this is, if you have.
Works for Noah.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. But the raven, again, no one has a pet raven, right? And no one's a Baltimore fan. So the ravens are cruel. Mesuzah Dovin says ravens are very cruel, where they'll even steal from their own young. That if the raven is hungry, it's so aggressive and cruel that it will it wants to survive on its own, and therefore Hashem is saying, look, Eliyahu, I'm going to have a raven bring you food. The raven, which is so cruel, is going to have mercy on you. Can't you have mercy on the Jewish people? Can't you have, right? You're taking such a cruel approach by enacting a drought for the entire Jewish people. So that's the symbol of the raven. That if the raven can have chemla on you, why can't you have on the Jewish people? So Eliyahu listens. Pasuk Hey, Vayelech. He goes. Vayashka Dvar Hashem. He follows the Dvar Hashem. Vayelech Vayeshev Vanachal Chris. He finds this place Nachal Chris. The Mefarshim are, again, they're not sure exactly where it is. Asher Al Pnei Hayarden, which is facing the Yarden. Pasuk Vav. V'horvim Mivim Lo Lechem Ubasar Baboker. V'lechem Ubasar Be'erev. He gets a meat meal twice a day, bread and meat in the morning. Somehow these ravens deliver it, and then again in the evening, u'minanachal yishteh, and from the river he eats. So, you know, whether you want to say, you know, how you want to treat the question. So some people maybe would want to treat the question seriously. Some people maybe wouldn't. You know, was the food kosher? Kind of thing. How could he trust the food that the ravens are bringing? So that quotes a number of approaches. He says, right, one approach to say it must be, it was kosher food. It's Eliyahu Navi. How could he not eat kosher food? And it's a sign to say, where would these ravens get the food? It must be from local places. If they're getting it from local places, it must be even in the northern kingdom where they worship Avodah Zarah, they still keep kosher. There's still some Jews who keep kosher. So the ravens must have flocked to those homes and gotten food, you know, some of the scraps, whatever it is, and brings the food to Eliyahu. There's another approach to say that it not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily have to be kosher. How could it be? It could just be that he's following what's considered to be in the time of the Nevi'im, what's considered to be a harasha, a temporary halachic psak from Hashem, not to follow the Torah. That there can be, in the time when we had Nevi'im, 612 mitzvos, you'll see why I say approximately, 612 mitzvos that if a Navi comes and says for a short amount of time, Hashem said, don't keep this mitzvah, you're allowed to listen to the Navi if he or she is a real Navi. They have to prove themselves. If a Navi comes and says, even for a short amount of time, to worship Avodah Zarah, so I'm counting that as one mitzvah, but we know that there actually are many mitzvahs associated. So it's probably more than just, it can't be 612, but the idea is that, so here, eating not kosher is a sin, and therefore, but for a short amount of time, we're going to see it's a year, but relatively, that's not saying, you know, take Parsha Shmini, the laws of kashrus, and just cut it out of the Torah. If a Navi says to do that, that means they're a Navi Sheker. You can't get rid of any mitzvah, you can't add any mitzvah, but Horasha, for a short amount of time, you can do. So maybe Eliyahu HaNavi ate not kosher for one whole year. However you slice it, he went ahead, this is how he provided for himself, or Hashem provided for him for a year. And basically the idea is, if Hashem wanted to eat kosher, the food would come from a kosher source. If Hashem didn't want it, he wouldn't want it. Pasuk Zayin, Vayhi Miketzei Yamim, it was the end of days. Mefarshim seem to understand Yamim as a year. We do have that in many places. We had that in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, when Elkanah, Shmuel's dad, and Chana would go to Shiloh. It says Miyamim Yamima, which refers to an annual trip. There's a phrase like that in Parashas Bo, which some people think you should be, where it talks about tefillin, you should be maybe annually you have to check your tefillin. We don't follow that approach. But yamim refers to perhaps a year, so it was after a period of a year. Vayivash hanachal, the river ran dry. It's a drought, so that it's not being replenished. So it ran dry. Kilohaya Geshem Ba'aretz, there was no rain. And so this is the beginning, or this is round one, of Eliyahu feeling the effects. All of a sudden he has no drink. It could be the ravens are still coming, but they're only bringing him bread and meat. He's missing the basic, you know, source for life, which is water, and now he's feeling the effects of the rain. So we continue. Pasachas. Again, that same phrase. Vayhi dvar Hashem elav lemor. And the word of Hashem came to him, meaning Eliyahu, saying, Kum lech, pasuk tes, kum lech tzarfasa asher litzidon. Go to Tzarfas, which is towards Tzidon, via shafta sham, And now you should dwell there, you should live there. Hine tzivisi sham isha amana l'chal kelecha. I don't know why I can't say this one. L'chal kelecha. I have commanded there a widow, a widowed woman, to sustain you, to support you. Mefarshim debate, where is this place, Tsarfas? Is it an Israeli town and it's just like near Sidon? Or is it actually outside the bounds of Israel and it's in, or actually either near or in Sidon, which is a northern kingdom, right? Sidon, where, you know, Lebanon is today. So we know that the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael then were not the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael now. Boundary of Eretz Yisrael, specifically David HaMelech, was very successful in expanding the borders into Syria, right? The language in the Mishnayos referred to this land called Syria. Syria is a place where all the mitzvos, hatluyos baretz, the mitzvos that are only observed in the land of Israel. So in Syria, which was annexed by David, David did it not with the permission necessarily of the Sanhedrin. So it never received full status of Eretz Yisrael, but it was like Eretz Yisrael rabbinically. It was Eretz Yisrael midirabbanan, not like here, which is nothing. It's a nice place. We're thankful that Hashem lets us live here, but halachically, in terms of sanctity of the land, it's nothing. You don't have to take trumas and maestras. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we who only visit Eretz Yisrael, we sometimes look at those things as a nuisance to deal with. And if you end up buying, fruit that comes from Eretz Yisrael, so as far as I've heard, the Rabbanut is very nice for the people who live in Eretz Yisrael, but they're not so nice for us. On the exports out of the land of Israel, they don't separate trumas and maestras. So if you buy a box of oranges, Jaffa oranges don't always come from Israel anymore. Sorry. But we have to look at the bag. If it says it comes from Brazil, then you're fine. If it says it comes from Israel, so you have to take out an article sitter, look in the index, and you have to separate Truma and Maestras from there because it came from Eretz Yisrael. In Syria, so this is some of the lands that David expanded, so there you had to take Trumas and Maestras, all the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, Midrabanan. So this place, Tsarfas, it may have actually been close to Sidon, but it still was an Israeli town, because it was just the borders were much bigger. Now Hashem says, "I've commanded a woman to give sustenance to you." So on the surface level, at first blush, you would say, "It sounds like this woman, she must be in communication with Hashem. If Hashem commanded her, so He must have talked to her. So maybe she's a neviyah." Some of the Farshim understand what does it mean? Hashem is commanding. Hashem pulls the strings. Hashem is telling Eliyahu, "Go to this town. I'm arranging for a certain woman to provide for you, and you're going to have something to do with this woman," and therefore, it's as if God is commanding it. You know, that the God, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that the whatever you're supposed to have for the year in terms of finances is decided in Rosh Hashanah. Everything else that happens, so that's, you know, it's just God's way of working out where is it coming from, and who's the shliach who's going to give it to you? Is it going to be your boss? Is it going to be winning the lottery? Is it going to be, you know, some great aunt's Yerusha that you never even knew she existed? And whatever, you'll get it somehow, some way, and that's Hashem quote unquote commanding it. So hinei tzivisi sham isha almana is just Hashem telling Eliyahu she's going to provide the sustenance to you. So he listens, Pasuk Yud, Vayakam Vayelech Tsarfasa. Eliyahu gets up, he goes right away to Tsarfas. Vayavo Pesach Ha'ir, he comes to the entrance of the city. V'hinei sham yishal mana mikosheshet etzim. There's a woman who is gathering wood. She's gathering wood. I can't tell for sure if the Metzudas Tzion is defining the term mikosheshes etzim in a way to inform the story, because he says that she was collecting very small pieces of wood, and he's relating it to the word kash, which is like hay, very, very, very small sticks. It could just be, because we're going to see she's very poor, it could be he's saying that because she maybe didn't have access to, and so she's like in the marketplace. She's taking whatever scraps of wood that she could possibly find. Other people have, you know, big logs of wood, but she just has the little things that she could take off the floor. So here she is, she's collecting wood. Vayikra Ela Vayomar, and he, meaning Eliel, calls out to her and says, Kechina li ma'at mayim bakli ve'eshta. Please take for me a little bit of water in a vessel, and I shall drink it. The Radak and others point out that he doesn't know. He doesn't know who she is, and he doesn't know how to find her. So Rashi says, Hulohaya makir ba'almana shamar lo kadosh baruch. He didn't recognize her. The li made me Eliezer ever at Avram. This week's parsha Chayisara, right? Pretty amazing. Learned one parak that connected us to Vayira, and now it connects us to Chayisara. He learned from Eliezer. Eliezer gave a test. The one who was going to possess the midah of kindness, that was going to be the right wife for Yitzchak. So here, right? So there you could say Eliezer was reading in Yitzchak. He needs a balas chesed. Maybe some of the more mystical sources say that since Yitzchak was so oriented towards gevura and din, being strict justice, so he needed an ezer kenegdo. He needed the other side of his coin, his wife, to be a balas chesed, full of chesed, kind of like his father, in order to, you know, in order to produce a Yaakov, who was like a combination. But here, Eliyahu, the test makes even more sense, because he's trying to find the person who's going to sustain him for the next little while. So it makes sense to find someone who's a balas chesed. The Art Scroll note doesn't quote anyone on the phrase kechina. It's a little bit odd. Take for me water. It should be give me some water. So the Art Scroll note points out that an idea that when we do charity, so we think we're giving to someone else, but in reality we're really taking. In reality, by us doing good for someone else, it's for me. That's the famous every high school kid's favorite Dvar Torah, is to just pretend that the word v'nasnu is in the Torah, in that week's parsha. If you just, because no one really knows all the words, so if you get asked the Dvar Torah, they say, "Oh, it says in the Torah v'nasnu." V'nasnu is spelled the same way backwards and forwards, because when you give, you're really getting back. It doesn't say that in every parsha in the Torah. It does say it, I think, by the Mishkan or in the context of Mishkan, so it makes sense over there. But so that maybe that's why he says kechi kechina as opposed to nasanna, or please give to me nasanli na. So he asks a request. Pasuk Yud Aleph. It's working. Vatelech lakachas. She goes to take. Meaning she goes to get him what he asked. So that already, in his mind, she's passed the test. The fact that she didn't reject him, she said yes, so now she passed the test. So he's not just thirsty, he's also hungry. Vayikra Eleha Vayomar, he calls out to her and he says, in a very just normal, he probably was actually hungry. And he says, L'chi na li pas lechem biyadech. Please also take for me a slice of bread that you have in your hands. Meaning, you must have some bread. So as you're getting the water and you're bringing me the water, please bring me some bread. And the assumption is that he has no idea in terms of her finances. Maybe she didn't. You have to imagine, when we see what she has monetarily, what she has in terms of food and ability to support herself, we're going to see her son. So you have to imagine that she wasn't dressed to the nines. So she probably looked like someone who was poor. But there's no indication from the Mefarshim that Eliyahu knew anything other than she seems to be the one, she's passing the test, and so he asks a natural request to have bread. Vatomer Yudbeis, she says back, Chai Hashem Elokecha, by the life of Hashem, your God, Im yesh li ma'og, if there is even to me a ma'og, Rashi says, uga, which we normally translate uga, we say is a cake. Somehow the Art Scroll translates it as cookie. What do you get in your translation?
Cake.
So why is Art Scroll saying cookie? I don't mean to make a con. I'm not making like a joke. It must be like, you know, a cookie is a small version of a cake. And she's trying to say, I don't even have the littlest thing. So maybe that's why I didn't ask them, but maybe that's why they say cookie. But she's taking a shvua almost. By the life of Hashem, I don't have anything. I don't even have an uga. Ki im melo kaf kemach bekad. I have a fistful of flour in a jug. Uma'at shemen betzapachas, and a little bit of oil in a flask. Vehinini mokeshes shenayim etzim. I'm trying to get like two pieces of wood. That doesn't necessarily work with what the how the mitzidos tzion, because if you're going to say it's two twigs, that's not going to do anything. So okay, two woods. Uvasi, I'm going to go. Vasi suhu, and I'm going to make it. I mean, I'm going to make a little dish of this little bit of flour, little bit of oil. Li ulivni, I'm going to make it for me and my son. Vachal nuhu, and we're going to eat it. Vamasnu, we're going to die. She's expressing, not necessarily that she's going to die immediately upon eating what she makes, but this is it. This is all I got. And I have nothing else. So I can go get you the water, presume maybe there's some type of well of some sort. So she's able to have access to water. But when Eliyahu asks for food, she has no access to food. She has all that. She says, I'm on my last bits here. So Eliyahu should not be looked at as, you know, kind of, you know, being cruel to her. He may not have known what her status was, and she doesn't necessarily know who Eliyahu is. She picks up something, because if you look at her language, Vatomer Chai Hashem Elokecha, she refers to Hashem as Eliyahu's Hashem. Now, we're going to see that she seems, from the beginning to end, there's no indication, she seems to be a very God-fearing woman. So why doesn't she refer to Hashem as her Hashem? So either you could say it's respectful, or you could say she picked up on something. She picked up that Eliyahu is a godly person, and in her eyes, he's more godly than her. And so she refers to Hashem as Hashem Elokecha. Now you could say, at this point, maybe she's, you know, I don't want to say bad about her, because there's nothing bad to say about her. But at this point, if you don't know the end of the story, maybe she worships idols. So she's actually saying, you know, fine, I'm talking to you. He had a kippah on, he had a hat. I don't know what. I guarantee you, in many of the schools, they draw Eliyahu Hanavi having a nice hat and maybe a beard and everything. I don't know. He probably had a beard. He probably didn't. He probably had a. I don't know. But she knew. She knew that he was something, but she didn't know how much. You know, maybe she might not have, had she known that he was a Navi, maybe she wouldn't have spoken to him the way that she spoke to him, but she's desperate. She's clearly desperate. And he responds in kind. and he's going in Eliyahu's mind, he has to be thinking to himself, wait, Hashem told me to go to this place. Hashem told me that there's a woman there who's going to provide for me. I made a test of kindness, and she passed the test. I mean, she is going to be the one to provide for me. She's going to be the one to provide for me like the ravens provided for me. The ravens provided for me in a very miraculous fashion. Ravens, right, we just said, naturally they're cruel. That means if they have a portion of food, they're not dropping it off by your house. They're bringing the food to where, you know, unless they drop it by accident. My dad always tells us a story about one of his rebbeim in Kew Gardens Hills, where he was at his house on Erev Pesach, and it was after the time of the time that you can't have chametz, and the squirrel dragged a whole loaf of bread onto the rabbi's lawn and left it. And like, okay, it's not a big deal. Take it, throw it in the garbage. It's not yours. It's the squirrel. But it's like the feeling of it, you know? But so the birds are supposed to drop, they're supposed to drop things off. They're not supposed to do that. It's a miracle that they provided for him. So she's also going to have a miracle. So he and this is the same Eliyahu who opened his mouth and said there won't be any rain. And Eliyahu who opened his mouth and said there won't be any rain, he can say something like this, and some of Farshim say even more than that. He had a tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, in the time of Korach, he said something, you know, that never happened before. It never happened before that the earth would open up and swallow individuals. That never happened before. So Eliyahu can do things that never happened before. Hashem's going to listen. And that was to take care of the Russia. Here he's trying to provide sustenance for himself and for this woman and her son. And we'll see that, you know, the story unfolds further in terms of kindness that this woman deserves. So Pasuk Yigimel, Vayomer Eleha Eliyahu, Eliyahu says to her, Al Tiri, don't become afraid. Don't be fearful. She's already afraid. Don't be afraid. Bowi Asi Kedvarech, Bowi, he's paraphrasing herself. She said, Uvasi Vasi. Who's who? So he says back to her, Bo asi kedvarich, go and do according to your word. Meaning, go make that little cake. Ach, but, Asi li misham uga katana berishona votzeis li. Make of that little thing that you have, make for me something small at first, and give it to me. Bring it out to me. V'lach ulevneich tasi b'achrona, and then you and your son will have the final, will have what's left. So the Radak says, it makes sense according to that approach that he's a Kohen. What's she doing? Hafrasha Schala. She has, we all know, many of us know, many of us do this often, you need to have 5 pounds of flour to have Hafrasha Schala. So clearly she doesn't have 5 pounds of flour. Okay, so it could be the idea of it that he needs to give her first. And the idea also is we're about to see that a miracle is going to happen. She has to put in her effort. She has to do her hishtadlus. What's her hishtadlus? Her effort is to give Eliyahu some of the sustenance first. By doing that, she's going to be deserving of Hashem's kindness in order to allow her to continue to give Eliyahu. And the byproduct is that she's going to have for her son, and maybe even further. Now, Eliyahu doesn't leave her hanging and rely on her faith. He continues talking, Pasuk Yudalid. Ki cho amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So has Hashem said, the God of Israel, which means this is a language of prophecy, so he must have received this, whether originally or subsequently, he received some type of nevuah from Hashem to say the following, Karakemech lo sechle, the jar of flour will not finish. V'tzapachas Hashem en lo techsar, and the flask of oil will not be missing, will not lack. Ad yom teis Hashem geshem al pnei adama, until the day that God provides rain on the face of the ground, and maybe even further than that, until the rain has an effect on the ground, until the rain produces crops, that she was going to have a magical, a miracle jug of flour, an everlasting flour jug, and an everlasting oil flask. And therefore, she would be totally handled and totally taken care of. Pasuk Tesvav, Vatelach Vatasek Kedvar Eliyahu. She went and she did. She followed the exact instructions of Eliyahu. Vatochel hi vahu uvesa yamim. And she ate. Hi vahu. It's spelled hu vahi, and the way it's read is hi vahu, which is maybe to somehow signify. Technically, he was the more prominent individual between the two of them, but she was the one who was doing all the preparation. So it kind of highlights that the food was on his behalf, but she was the one guiding it. Uvesa, it provides for her household, which the Mefarshim pick up on. If it was just for her son, then it would have just said, right, Vatochal hivahu uvena, and her son, the same son that she talked about before. Apparently it went further, that the Radak implies that she was able to provide for other relatives. She had enough yamim for at least for a year, as the pasuk says, pasuk tazayin, karakemech lo chalasa, the jar of flour never ran out, the tzapachas Hashem lo chaser, and the flask of oil did not lack. Kedvar Hashem, like Hashem had said, Asher Diber Biyad Eliyahu, that he spoke in the hands of Eliyahu, that he spoke through Eliyahu. So if anyone asks you what was the first, container of oil that lasted with a miracle, you have it right here in Pasuk Yud Zayin. And this is the first time that such a miracle took place. Eliyahu felt comfortable. This was Hashem is inspiring it through Nevuah to ask her to do this. And again, it had her kind of hishtal. It had her starting it off, and then it continues further. So still, we still have not come back to Achav, and it seems we are 2 years in to a drought. So the rest of the kingdom is going through 2 years without rain. And Eliyahu had spent 1 year by the river, 1 year, at least in terms of what we see here in the Psukim, being sustained by this woman. We don't know yet where Eliyahu lives. When he is in Tsarfas, where does he live? Where does he stay? It hasn't, for whatever reason, the Psukim haven't spelled that out. the pasuk Zayin. Vayhi achar hadvarim ha'ela. It was after these things happened, which we're to understand to be a year. So it wasn't any after anything specific, but it was after a year of the woman providing through the miracle of Hashem for Eliyahu. Chala ben ha'isha ba'alas habayis. The child of the woman, the son of the woman, became sick. The ba'alas habayis. She was the ba'alas habayis. So the Mitzvah Sion says the Adonis habayis, the landlady, as the arts girl, the mistress of the house. You can't say master, right? Mistress of the house. But why is she referring to that? Why is she the ba'alas habayis? It must mean that Eliyahu is a boarder. Eliyahu, not only does she provide him sustenance in terms of food, but she provided him with housing. So she is the ba'alas habayis. Vayihi chaliyo chazak ma'od. And behold, the illness of the child was very severe, very serious. Chazak ma'od, it came very strong. Ad asher lo nos rabo neshama. Until there was no breath left in him. Which most interpretations understand that the child died. The Radak quotes one approach that it may not be death. That it may be that there was no detectable breath. That the breath and the signs of life were so faint. And then again, that we're dealing with in biblical times, nothing's checking a heart and nothing is. But it was very, so the child is clearly in dire straits. But maybe you could interpret it that it's not full death. But the majority of opinions is say the child died. What did this child do to die? What did this woman who's been helping Eliyahu do deserve to go through this? So Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Rashi says, very shorthand, he said, "Kedei sheitzdarich l'mafteach shel tchias hamesim." In order that he would need, Eliyahu would need the key for tchias hamesim, for reviving the dead. Based on an agarta, a non-halachic piece of Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, the Gemara there says that Hashem has three keys for semi or full miraculous events. There's a key for childbirth, there's a key for tchias hamesim, and there's a key for rain. Eliyahu, when he called for the drought, he basically took control of the key of rain. Because as he had told Achav, it'll only rain, kim lefi davari, it'll only rain through my words. What's going to happen now is that the child dies, and Eliyahu is going to have to try to revive him. That means he's going to need the key for tchias hamesim. Hashem, in this Gemara, says, this is not right. I only have three keys. Eliyahu, you're an important Navi. It's not right for you to have two, and I only have one. So I need to take one back. So you want the key for Tchias HaMesim, then you have to give me back the key. You want to do Tchias HaMesim for a moment, momentarily? So then give me back the key, at least momentarily, for the rain. Give me control. Again, Hashem's organizing and orchestrating the world to work this way. Give me back the key for rain so that we'll be able to bring rain. I'll be able to send you, after this whole episode, I'll be able to send you on your way back to Achav in order to try to bring back the rain. Pasuk Yerches. Vatomer el Eliyahu. So she says to Eliyahu, Ma li v'alach ish ha'elokim. What is there between me and you, O man of God? I mean, clearly now she knows he's special. He's quoted God to her. He said Hashem's going to provide. He uses a language of prophecy. She herself has seen for an entire year. All right, her flour is not letting up, and her oil is not finishing. She's living the life of a miracle. She says, "What's going on, Basa Eli, that you have come to me, lahaskir es avoni, to remind or call attention to my sin, ulahamis es bani, and cause my son to die." So Rashi says that she's basically saying, listen, until now, you weren't in this town. I was a fairly religious woman. relative to the town, relative to Malchus Yisrael, I'm God-fearing. I don't worship idols. I'm like a tzaddikus. And therefore, a tzaddikus deserves reward, not punishment. But ever since you come to town, you're all Ish Elokim, and now I'm being compared to you. And I don't worship Hashem to the degree that I can't hold. I'm not at the standard that you. So you make me look bad. You make me look bad. I mean, sometimes we say this in the opposite. We say one of the reasons why we come to shul to daven is so we can get lost in the crowd. If we daven at home, which is okay, but when we're at home, so then Hashem is looking at us alone, and maybe we got something in the closet. Maybe we're not deserving. But if I come to shul and I'm just in the community, I get lost in the crowd, in the tzibur, so she's saying the other way. Before you came, I was like the most righteous around, and now that you've come, my flaws are more highlighted. And the other approach the Radak says is that maybe she was afraid. She was afraid that she didn't treat Eliyahu with enough respect. And when, on the one hand, having people in your life to respect is a great privilege and a great blessing, but it means you may not respect them appropriately, right? How many children will, you know, after 120 years, will hopefully they'll still ask mechila from a parent. They've had this privilege of honoring a parent, but they'll still say, maybe I didn't treat them with enough respect. She has the Gadol Hador, the greatest prophet of the time, living in her home, and she's providing. But that also raises the thing. Maybe one time she wasn't. So she's saying it must. And she's being so religious about it. She must be saying the fact that this is happening. It must be something because of me. So I'm going to take a play out of the Sephardic playbook. The Sephardim, this last parsha, Parshas Vayera, they stop the Haftorah from Malachim Beis when the child who's in the story with Elisha dies before Elisha is able to bring him back to life. They stop the Haftorah there. I guess they expect you to be so interesting to read it on your own. Ashkenazim, we have a whole long, we read it. So we're going to stop here. The boy is not with us, but have no fear. Eliyahu is here.